Corbin Burns made his first start at home in 2022, and, well, he picked up right where he left off. Don't go anywhere. Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody. Thanks for making us your first listen of the day. This is Locked On Brewers, your only daily podcast dedicated to your Milwaukee Brewers. I am Dominic Catronio, the statistician for Bally Sports Wisconsin, and he is Vinny Rotino, former big leaguer and now analyst on Bally Sports Wisconsin. We have everything you need to know about last night's victory, a 5-2 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates. They have claimed the first two games and the series over the Pirates so far here this week at American Family Field. We're also going to recap the great start by Corbin Burns. We're going to talk about the offense having just enough yesterday and learn some stuff in the bullpen as well yesterday too. But if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our YouTube page. We're simply Locked On Brewers there as well. Vinny, this was it wasn't a shutout, but it felt like a shutout. And from the first inning on, you could tell Corbin Burns had it. You know, I'm putting air quotes, it, tonight. What jumped out at you? I mean, we were texting in the first couple of innings. What jumped out at you from Corbin Burns' outing yesterday?
Man, I mean, Craig Counsell uses the word crisp all the time in his press in his pressers after the game, and that's what it looked like. His cutter was coming out so crisp out of his hand. And man, it looked like just how much break it had on it. I was like, man, that is a bigger pitch. I would almost guarantee. I'm gonna go ahead and text Chris Hook or some of the other people that I know. I said, what did he do in between starts? Because that cutter looked like it was breaking like a slider on TV for me. And my goodness, I did text you, and you did say that it has a couple of inches more break on it. And that's what was so impressive to me. And then everything plays off that. Obviously, the command was so good with that pitch tonight as well. He's able to get it to spots. And again, that sets up everything else. And he mixed in everything else tonight, and everything was working. So these are the starts. I thought to myself, my goodness, he's going to throw a no-hitter. And then Newman did hit that base hit over Colton Wong's glove by one inch, and then obviously that broke it up. But he did leave a couple of mistakes out over the middle, but they were, inconsequential. All right, there you go. I've been podcasting for a while here, and
big word.
Still figuring things out. Yeah, big word. But yeah, it was an absolutely brilliant performance from Corbin Burns, but that cutter definitely stood out to me.
In the cutter, it did level off by the end of the day. But, you know, in the first couple of innings, he was getting 6 inches, 7 inches of break on it. He averages about 4 to 5 inches of break on it. So the fact that he was getting that much movement on it, he still throws it more than any other pitch in his arsenal. It is essentially his, what another pitcher would use as a four-seam fastball, he uses as his four-seam fastball. This cutter, he threw it 68 times last night. 48 of them were strikes. Okay, so that's better than two-thirds, right? He's doing his job with the cutter against these hitters, keeping them off balance, because as you mentioned, when you have a cutter that's on and everything moves, right, even his two-seamer moves, right, you don't know which direction it's going to come out of when it hits that tunnel, when it hits that spot. And that's why we saw that second time through the order. There were some ugly, ugly swings against Corbin Burns.
I say this a lot, right? So, like, hitting looks like it's not easy on TV, but it doesn't look that difficult, right? It's like, okay, the ball's right there. Why can't you put your barrel on it? And pitches don't look like they're moving that much from like a normal pitcher, right? I mean, I guarantee you, if you stood in against Brandon Woodruff, his stuff would be like, you wouldn't be able to see it. And it's moving a ton, but it doesn't look like it's moving that much on TV. With Corbin Burns, it looks like it's moving a lot. So that, therefore, it's going to be a lot harder to hit once you're in that box and trying to figure out where this ball is going to end up. I'm looking right here at the velocity. He was throwing his cutter at 92-96 tonight, and he was putting it wherever he wanted. So again, this cutter is breaking. If you're a hitter, it's breaking to, you know, I guess to the left-handed batter's box, right? A good 6-7 inches right at the last second. Now all of a sudden he drops the changeup on you and it's going the other way at 90 miles an hour. Like, we saw Daniel Vogelbach take probably the ugliest swing of his life, because he doesn't take swings like that, right? That changeup that he swung at, and it looked like it was a wiffle ball changeup. So again, it's like such nasty stuff, and it's commanded. That's the thing. Like, you see some guys that can just throw disgusting sliders and fastballs, but like, the command of it is what makes him Cy Young.
7 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, both earned on 2 solo homers. 0 walks, 10 strikeouts. And I think maybe of all those numbers I read, there's one more even more impressive, crazy, surprising number from all of this. 107 pitches on a Craig Council-led pitching staff. Are you surprised he got to go 107 pitches in his third start of the year?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think maybe he wanted to get through all 7 innings, maybe wanted to guarantee the win, which again is not like a, you know, Craig Council. I mean, he's not going to push guys just to kind of get through, you know, cover the 7 innings. So now you have Brad Boxberger to be able to come back tomorrow. But I don't know. Yeah, it was a little bit strange. Obviously, there wasn't a whole lot of stressful pitches, so maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe they have a new stat, some new data out about stressful pitches and how you can go a little bit deeper. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't put it past the group there. But yeah, I'm with you. That's a good point. 107 pitches in the third start of the year with a shortened spring training. So, you know, clearly he looked sharp enough, and it didn't look like he was in any kind of fatigue type of situation.
Only he, Max Scherzer, and a Red Sox pitcher are the only ones who have gone over 100 pitches so far here in the young season. Some impressive numbers from tonight's start. First and foremost, as a team, the Brewers get at least 12 strikeouts and also continued 0 walks in this game. It was now, with that stat line, 12 strikeouts, 0 walks. They had 7 such games as a pitching staff last season. They have had now 13 since the start of 2019. Now, think again, they've had 7 since last year and now 13 since 2019. They only had 8 such starts, walk-free and at least 12 strikeouts from 2010 to 2017. You are in a golden age of pitching right now for the Brewers organization, and it's impressive to watch because it gets even better. Here's some more numbers. Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns now both have 16 starts since the start of 2020 with at least 6 innings pitched, at least 8 strikeouts, and 2 or fewer runs. That is a dominant quality start right there. To have at least 6 innings, 8 strikeouts, and 2 or fewer runs, that is one shy of the major league lead. And you have 2 guys that have the same number of starts. And the guy who's in the lead is first ballot Hall of Famer Max Scherzer.
Wow, so that's super impressive. And what that says to me is a couple of things. One, the game has changed a little bit, right? So pitching is kind of dominating hitting for the last however many years now, 4 or 5 years, okay? Just because of the new data analytics, the lab, all this stuff. We can really figure out how to attack hitters' weak spots. I think the zone is, they're taking advantage of that high zone as well. They're learning how to get more vertical movement on their four-seamers, blah, 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 right? It's very, 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 very difficult to hit now, and they've figured out how to exploit that, right? However, I will say that it also says that the Brewers are better at developing this than a lot of other teams since they have 2 guys. So, and then Freddie Peralta is not far behind. I think he's probably going to join that company in that group as well. I mean, I think he's that good to do so. So, and maybe even Eric Lauer, my goodness, with how good he looked since July. So anyway, my point is the Brewers are really, really good at developing these guys because these guys were not that good. They were not elite prospects and can't-miss prospects coming up through the system. Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns were developed by Chris Hook and the rest of the pitching group.
And this last time through the starters was phenomenal. Going back to Corbin Burns' last start in Baltimore, the only bad start these 6 guys, including Aaron Ashby, was the clunker by Freddie Peralta at home against the Cardinals. The other 5 were terrific starts. Ashby didn't go as long as maybe people thought he would, but it was his first actual start of the season, so he was going to be reined in a little bit. Woodruff shoved in the home opener. Hauser pitched better than a loss indicates. We've seen Burns shove twice. We saw Lauer shove on Monday. this is a good stretch. I mean, given all the worry of the first time around, this is a really, really fun stretch right now. And Corbin Burns caps it off with his 13th career 10 strikeout game. Awesome stuff.
And what it shows, and what it's telling, and I'm going to make a t-shirt out of this because I tweeted this out like a week ago or a little bit more than a week when the Brewers were struggling against the Baltimore Orioles. They lost the first game against the Orioles. I tweeted out like, look, the Brewers have a chance to win a game every single night. Doesn't matter if they've lost a couple in a row. They've got a guy on the mound. Whoever it is, whatever his name is, of those six guys, they got a chance to win every single night. So, they're not going to go on these extended losing streaks. They're always going to be in this playoff race. They're always going to be, they're always going to have a chance to make a run at these playoffs and go deep. So that's what we can take away from this.
So we're going to get into the offense. There wasn't as much to talk about with the offense. We're also going to preview tonight's game, or I should say this afternoon's game, given it's a 12:40 start getaway day before tomorrow's off day. Before we do that, I want to tell you about one of our newest sponsors here on the Locked On Network, with, of course, Mother's Day right around the corner. If she prefers a statement piece or everyday subtle elegance, BlueNile.com has fine jewelry options for every single mom. You can shop high-quality classic diamond earrings, elegant tennis bracelets, or even gemstone pendant necklaces as well. They are your Mother's Day source. They can make it memorable, something enduring. Look, fine jewelry is a great gift, and it can last a long time. Your mom's going to remember, oh, I remember when you gave me this bracelet that she's wearing out or whatever. Classic diamond stud earrings, you've got the bracelets, you've got pendants, and it's all at BlueNile.com. They have expert advice for you as well. 24/7 legendary service with 30-day returns. And when you commit to a piece, so does Blue Nile. There is guaranteed service and repair on the piece for life, and it's their diamond price guarantee as well. You can contact Blue Nile to compare a competitor's diamond against one of ours, and in most cases, they can meet or even beat the price. So this Mother's Day, give mom something she'll treasure forever with fine jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On Brewers listeners get $50 off, $500. This podcast exclusive is only good through Mother's Day, so use the promo code LOCKEDON, simply put, Locked On, and every order is insured. Ships for free and arrives in discreet packaging. That way you won't give away what's actually inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever peace at BlueNile.com. Vinny, have you got a Mother's Day gift yet, or do you have a plan yet, or are we spoiling things for Maggie if she's listening?
No, we don't want to spoil anything, so let's just keep it a secret.
Way to keep your cover. Good job there. Let's talk about the offense here. This was an anomaly game for a multitude of reasons. Obviously, the Brewers win 5-2. They got out-hit in this game by one, 4-3. But yet, all three hits produced runs. And they were perfect innings. And then it snowballed there in the second. Hunter Renfro hit his first homer as a Brewer. Rowdy Tellez hit a no-doubter. Also, a two-run broken bat double by Colton Wong. But other than that, those are your three hits. Absolutely nothing else happened for the offense. So only six innings of 1-2-3 ball. Everything else was in the second and the seventh inning tonight. I don't feel as good about the offense, even though they won 5-2. Am I fair in being worried about that?
You're fair. I don't worry. Worry is a word that we tend to throw around because it is worrying at times about this offense and the fact that they can't get very consistent with things, especially, you know, Yelich hits the grand slam and goes 0-for-4 with two punch outs. It's important for him to kind of string together a few games in a row where he feels good, right? Because he carries a lot of weight for this offense. I can see it in his face, right? We can all see it. Like, he puts a lot of pressure on himself to perform and to kind of carry this offense. And so it's important for him to string a couple of games together. I thought he just missed a pitch in that first at-bat, and he flew out to left field. It's a great swing. He just got underneath it. And then he hit a missile where Ben Gamel was playing on the warning track. I don't know why he was playing so deep. But, unfortunately, he came away with no hits. McCutcheon's kind of slowed down a little bit, and Tellez is the bright spot in this offense. He's been super consistent. He's 273 average, 870 OPS with two bombs now. He's been driving in runs consistently. So that's important. You know, having some protection for Yelich, and then Renfro is obviously going to be another guy that's going to add and, you know, offer protection for Yelich as well. So it is. I mean, three hits. I mean, they gotta string together some more. I mean, JT Brubaker, I thought looked really, really good last year, and then he had a terrible second half, made me look not that smart about scouting these guys. But he looked really good tonight. There's a theme here, though, Dom. I don't know if you agree with it. Like, sometimes I think the Brewers kind of bring out the best in some guys, right? Sometimes, because of what we talked about, that, like, these guys can get in a groove on the mound. And because there's some empty at-bats in there, they get in that groove, they settle in, and then they realize, oh, I just got to execute pitches against these guys. So I think we do see that at times. So we'd like to see these guys string together some more hits and grind out some at-bats to make those starting pitchers and, you know, opposing team pitchers a little more uncomfortable out there.
And the other thing with that is the fact that the Brewers came into yesterday's game second in all of baseball at chase rate, meaning they don't chase pitches outside of the zone. They don't strike out. I know it feels like they maybe strike out more than other teams. They really don't strike out as often as other teams, and even as often at some points last season. They're right in the middle of the pack where it comes to strikeouts, and they've played every game that they've had scheduled aside from one game. So they've played 12 games, which is more than most teams, quite frankly, at this point. They're right in the middle of the pack as far as strikeouts. They're drawing a ton of walks still, too, which also complements that chase rate. But I think what happened, too, you got a new look at a guy on the other end. How good was Contreras coming out of the bullpen? For the second straight day, the Pirates bring out somebody who can really go in and out, change speeds up and down. And Contreras was a guy that they got back in the Jameson Taillon deal a couple of years ago from the Yankees. He turns out to be someone really, really good. And it was your first eyes on this guy in the big league. So there is definitely some unfamiliarity with that. On a positive note, Rowdy Tellez continues to prove why he is the everyday first baseman for these Milwaukee Brewers. 114 miles an hour off the bat. The fourth hardest home run hit this season. And the guys ahead of him is pretty good company. It is the guys ahead of him are Vlad Jr. and Giancarlo Stanton. Okay? That Vlad's done it twice, a harder hit homer than him. Giancarlo, of course, he's the hardest hitter in baseball. And then Rowdy Tellez has the fourth hardest hit home run this season. This dude is grabbing life by the horns right now. He is not letting go of his opportunity, and he is making his manager and his front office proud ever since July 6th in that trade.
Yeah, we talk about him a lot, and he's really proving us right, you know, and his ability to really help the infield defense as well with his ability to kind of scoop balls out of the dirt and be that big target over there. He's a smooth first baseman. And then, yes, the bat is obviously the thing that's going to continue to have him be in the lineup every single day. What's impressive to me about Rowdy, even on a – I think he punched out his fourth at-bat, and he – or was it his third at-bat? Because he actually only got three plate appearances tonight, so it was which is surprising. That's how few base runners the Brewers did get on tonight with those three hits, and they only played eight innings because they won at home. So, but he got three at-bats. It was his third at-bat. He really does give a really tough at-bat for being such a big guy, right? So what you normally see is these big guys are a little bit all or nothing, but he is not. And that's what I love about his game. Is that he'll fight off tough pitches, he'll spoil nasty sliders or nasty changeups from a righty, and then he will get his pitch and he'll put a good swing on it and hit something hard. And he's not trying to hit home runs either. That's the other thing about this kid. He's not trying to hit home runs. He's trying to hit line drives. We saw that two games ago against the St. Louis Cardinals. He hit that missile to the opposite field. That was a super impressive swing for that double that beat Harrison Bader. I love his game. I think it's a very good complement to what this Brewers team needs on the offensive side of things.
And as far as Rowdy goes, that at bat you're talking about, he seven pitches deep before he ended up popping out there in the sixth inning, and that was one of the first guys to see Roansy Contreras. So he continues to battle, and he rips a no-doubter in the second inning. That was after a leadoff walk to Andrew McCutchen, makes Brubaker pay. I mean, the dude is doing everything he asked, and he's playing great first base. It's fun to watch him take over. We finally saw Hunter Renfro go deep last night as well. He had just missed a couple. This one wasn't hit as hard as the other ones he's hit this weekend on opening weekend. But Renfro is another chance to make this lineup even deeper than it is. Because, you know, yesterday was the A lineup aside from Caratini and Narvaez. And, of course, when Urias comes back, we do have news on Urias coming up in just a second. But, you know, Peterson's off to an ice-cold start right now. He had a hat trick last night. And he knows that when Urias comes back, his playing time will be slashed dramatically. But the point is, this lineup's getting deeper and deeper as the season goes on, assuming that Renfro gets going, Urias returns. Even Kane put the ball in play and hit the ball hard a couple of times today. Albeit a poor showing, there are building blocks here 12 games into the season.
Yeah, and the thing I like about Hunter Renfro, it gives me some encouragement that he's going to be just fine. And he's got the track record to prove that he will be just fine, is the fact that when you see this guy play, and when they pan to the dugout and you see him, it doesn't look like he's a guy that would press that much, right? And so that's encouraging that, you know, as a guy that played alongside probably 1,000 guys over the course of my career, you know, I can pick some of that stuff out and see, you know, is this guy kind of an insecure guy? Is he a guy that's going to press and really struggle for long periods of time? I don't see that from Hunter personally. And so that was a really good, like, sign that he's breaking out of it, because the Contreras was throwing 97, 98, and there is some some extra giddy up on that fastball, and he hit a hanging slider. So that means he's really, really close to really kind of breaking it open and breaking out of it consistently. I say that because he was quoted after the game. He had an interview with Sophia Minner, and he said that he was definitely looking for fastball. He was not sitting slider. So when you can sit fastball 97 and adjust, albeit it was a hanging slider, still it's hard to hit when a guy is throwing that hard, and he did not miss it, and that was an absolute bomb.
It was great to watch. And on the note of Luis Urias, as we get ready to preview tonight's game, we got an update from Bally Sports Wisconsin. Sophia Minnert reported, and also Craig Council talked about it before the game, that it wasn't quite a setback, but they put Urias back a day or two, just letting him continue to play in extended spring training. He'll play in a game on Thursday down in extended spring training, and then if he comes out of that okay, maybe one more game in Arizona, then be sent on a rehab assignment. So at this point, I'd be shocked if he returns by the end of the month. It still certainly is a possibility, but Urias is resuming baseball, resuming actual games here by the end of the week, and we'll get more updates on his condition moving forward. Now, as we get ready to preview tonight's game, we want to remind you that today's episode is always brought to you by Built Bar, of course. They've got these awesome little puffs if you haven't tried them yet. They've got a cinnamon churro flavor. They've got a banana cream pie flavor. They got coconut marshmallow, covered in 100% real chocolate, just like the bars. And they have great macros for you as well. The Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein with amazing flavors like mint brownie, coconut almond. You've got white chocolate cookies and cream. They've got all their flavors coming out every month. You can see them all the time at Built.com. That's BUILT.com. Replace all your sweet treats with Built Bars. It'll make things a lot easier to eat healthy here almost halfway through the year, of course, or just getting going here with, you know, some of the couch surfing with NHL and NBA playoffs going on right now. But you can use our promo code LOCKED15. Again, that's LOCKED15 at Built.com, and you're going to get 15% off your order. One more time, LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Okay, one more game here in the series. Brandon Woodruff getting the ball as he started the homestand. He will get it to end the homestand. He'll be going up against Mitch Keller, a one-time top prospect in the Pirates organization. He is looking for his first win of the season. Woodruff is looking for his second. And we talked about this in yesterday's episode, Vinny, the fact that you need to win these games against teams you're supposed to beat. And to be fair, the Pirates are better than they were last year, especially offensively. There are guys that are giving good ABs. Pitching, there's a lot left to be desired, especially on the starting side. How far do you go of saying, how far can a sweep go, I should say, to setting a tone for the season here in April?
Big time, right? I mean, especially it's a shot in the arm because then the next time the Pirates come into town, you're like, okay, it's not like you're counting your chickens before they hatch in any by any means. Like you're not kind of taking them lightly, but you're like, okay, this is a team that we know we can beat. We know that we, you know, outmatch them on paper. And so we got to take care of business and we got to play. There's a level of comfort there when an opponent comes into town when you have had such success against them. And it's hard to explain. It's just one of those things where because you play baseball every single day and it is a grind every single day, and some teams you feel like you can't beat, and then some teams you're like, okay, I can't wait for the Pirates to come back into town. And yeah, it's important that they get this sweep here. I think Mitch Keller is an arm that, you know, is he an underachiever? I don't know. I think we're still trying to figure out what he is. But he throws hard and he's got good stuff. So again, I think at times the Brewers have brought the best out in some of these guys. Hopefully that's not the case tomorrow.
And as far as the Pirates, too, I mean, you talk about getting excited to see them, and all right, let's get back on track. You're going to see them next week on this road trip, too, yeah. This odd road trip, of course, where they go to Philly for the weekend, Friday through Sunday, come home for one game against the Giants as part of the revamped schedule on Monday, then head right back to Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates at their park. So you're going to see these guys again, and maybe even the same guys in the rotation by that time, too, so... It could really set a tone here with a sweep today, a 12:40 first pitch, coverage beginning at noon on Bally Sports Wisconsin. Plenty of time for you to watch both or listen on the radio and then have Bucks later tonight as well. You can get both. You can get your doubleheader in here, okay? But Brandon Woodruff getting the ball, and he will come off of a great start against the Cardinals, of course. For him, for me, I mean, the four-seam fastball is certainly still there for him. But when he's able to get swings and misses on his secondary stuff, specifically like the slider and the changeup, look, he can blow guys away with the best of them. We know that. Elevated fastballs at 96. But his next step to continue the role that he is in, to have legitimate strikeout pitches that isn't just, here's my fastball, go try to hit it. The Pirates have proven they can handle some velo, as we saw two bomb home runs yesterday. They can handle some velo, and now that it's finally going to be going a little bit straighter as opposed to Corbin Burns, I'm not saying it's perfectly straight, Woodruff is, it's not going to be as smooth sailing, I think, for Woodruff as it would be because they have already been geared up for velocity. Am I on to something here? If you're in the hitters meeting and you saw Burns yesterday and you're ready for Woodruff today knowing velo is coming again?
That's a great point. I was actually going to go there if you didn't make that point right there at the end. It's the fact that, like, you just face the nastiest stuff that was commanded, and we talked about the command that of Brandon Woodruff and how nasty his stuff is. We just saw the nastiest stuff we've ever seen in our entire lives. Okay, great. Let's clear that game and now go ahead and face the next guy in the rotation. Oh, great. It's Brandon Woodruff. It's 96, 98. It's commanded also, but it's not quite as nasty, right? It's not the exploding slider. It's not the exploding curveball. It's a good curveball. It's, you know, the slider's tightening up. The changeup's as good, I would say, on a consistency basis. Although Corbin Burns' slider, or I'm sorry, changeup when it's on is better than Brandon Woodruff's. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a tough role for Brandon Woodruff to play, but he's been able to do it. He's been able to do it really, really well. He's been able to kind of pitch his game and not try and be something he's not, or not try and be that Corbin Burns clone at all. He pitches his own game, and he's done such a phenomenal job of being consistent and commanding the ball. So, but you're definitely onto something. It's not an easy role for Brandon Woodruff to play.
All right. So again, 12:40 first pitch here today against the Pirates finale, looking for a sweep and looking to make it four wins in a row for the Brewers as they now improve their record to 7-5. As we sit here and record, Vinny, some other news in baseball right now that maybe by the time folks are listening to this morning that this could have gone on. But Max Fried has a perfect game through five against the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. We saw Max Scherzer carry a no-hitter into the sixth inning yesterday, and we thought that Corbin Burns had no-hitter stuff yesterday too. So it was ace day in MLB yesterday. So maybe by now, by the time you're listening, you'll know if Max Fried threw a no-hitter or a perfect game by this point. But also, weird anomaly that I never got a chance to mention. The fact that there were zero fly ball outs in this game. How crazy was that? Zero fly ball outs, only strikeouts and ground ball outs for the Brewers pitching staff.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard or seen. I've never heard anything like it. I mean, how does that happen? I mean, it happens because Corbin Burns obviously stays off the barrel better than anyone in baseball. I mean, but then he did give up the two home runs. So it's a very weird game. All those ground outs. And then obviously Devin Williams comes back and pitches well, as well as obviously Josh Hader, Yawn, another save for him. So really weird stat there.
Yep. Exactly. Really weird. But that'll do it for this episode. Thanks so much, everybody who's listened. We'll be right back tomorrow here, same time, same place, wherever you get your podcast as well. He is Vinny. I am Dom. Thanks again for listening, and see you today at the Brewer game, 12:40 first pitch. Until then, keep on swinging.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.